Thank you, John. I'm going to talk to you about, the title says Predictive Power of CDS Spreads. Basically, this is an empirical study, and in the truest sense of empirical studies, what we've done is we've spent a lot of time becoming familiar with our data before we formulated our hypotheses. And so what you're going to see is the results of the familiarization process. There is actually a paper being written right now which formulates a lot of this stuff a lot more precisely, but the overall flavor will be the same. I have to point out that John and I have been assisted in this work by two students, Matthew Merkley, an MBA student who has been very effective in acquiring information, and Mirella Pradescu-Vasvari, one of our PhD students. Now, I'm going to go through three stages here. There's a certain amount of overlap between what I'm going to do and what John did. First stage, I'm going to talk a little bit about the development of the market, just so you get some sense of what this market is like, and it has some idiosyncrasies that are not obvious until you start looking at it in some detail. For example, there were a lot of questions about sovereigns after John's talk. I'll just make the point that if you look at CDS spreads on sovereigns, they fall in two categories. They're either AA or AAA rated, and there's not many of those quotes, or they're C rated, which is very low quality. On the other hand, the corporate CDS market is investment grade only, which is BAA or better. As soon as you fall out of that category, the quotes dry up. So the first part I'm going to talk about is this CDS market. Then I want to talk about the rating process, because I want to talk about the relationship between agency ratings and CDS spreads, which is actually better than some of the comments earlier might suggest, I think. And then finally, I want to show you what the relationship is. So the CDS market, this is just the kind of data that you get when you look at a broker quote. This is just a broker quote sheet. They get on the phone, they talk, call people up, chat them up. The CDSs are done in terms of names rather than specific securities. So you buy insurance against a legal entity rather than on a particular debt issue. And the lives of the CDSs, John says, typically 5 years. And you have a bid and an offer. And then there's a bunch of other information, slightly more detail. But this is kind of the nature of the information that's out there. This was just a little slice out of 11th of January, 2002. And you can see there is Japan up there and a few corporates. KDIC is, I won't try to guess what it is. It's Korean something or other. Now, in terms of the development, this red line is the number of names on which quotes are available, how it's grown from small number in 98 to several thousand in 2000. And the volume of quotes has grown roughly in the same proportion. The right-hand scale is the volume of quotes from, next to nothing in 98 to about 120,000 in 2002. That's an annualized number. This is actually based on 5 months of observations. As it happens, just today we got an update on the database. So we now have data up to yesterday, I think it is, or 2 days ago. Now, in terms of the prices that you see out there, here you have, these are the averages for all quotes, just on an annual basis. So we just took all the quotes in 98, divided them into bids and offers, and just averaged them. So these are very non-homogeneous averages. But the point I wanted to make is if you look at this, the average quote has declined pretty sharply from 98 to 2000, and then since then has increased to some extent. I interpret the decrease as kind of a development of the market. People were very cautious about quoting on these things, and so quotes were high initially. Things became more competitive. Quotes came down. The subsequent run-up has been to do with the slowdown in the U.S. economy and the general decline in the average quality of the names being quoted since 2000. Bid-offer spreads, this is actually the bid-offer spread as a proportion of the average quote. Here you have the average bid-offer spread, and here you have the median bid-offer spread, because there's a huge skewness in the distribution. There's huge outliers. I focus on the median. So the median bid-offer spread is now down to about 12% of the quote itself. So on a 100 basis point quote, you'll see 100, 112 is sort of a typical bid-offer spread. And the most interesting statistic I observed is the ratio of the number of bids to the number of offers within a year. And this down here is about 0.65. There were very few bids in the early part of this market. Everybody was trying to sell insurance. It seemed like money for nothing, apparently. And by 2000, it's turned around so that now the number of bids to offers exceeds one. So now people want to buy protection. It's kind of an interesting evolution of the market. And to give you some sense of the range of quotes that you see, this is just a frequency distribution for the quotes. On the horizontal axis, we have the CDS spread, the median quote, and we only go up to 1,000 here. The actual highest quote is about 6,000 or 8,000 basis points. So you do see some very high spreads out there. But as you can see, the typical quotes are down here under 100 basis points. 50 to 100 basis points is the most typical sort of quote. And the distribution of maturities, as John said, 5 years dominate. This is actually everything more than 3 years and up to and including five, but it's almost entirely 5 years. Started at about half the market, now up in the 85% range, as John said. And the other quotes corresponding to that, under 3 years was about a third of the market, now down to about 10%. And over 5 years is actually very rare, particularly in the corporate market. These are almost all sovereigns, on the order of 5% of the market. So very little in the long-term end of the market. Now, I want to now go on and talk a little bit about the rating agencies. As it happens, John and I are fortunate to sit on an advisory board at Moody's. So we get to go down to New York every 6 months and spend a day or two with the Moody's people, which is hugely educational for me. I'm not sure what the Moody's people get out of it. But they seem to enjoy themselves. Anyway, what I've decided is that I certainly didn't understand the rating process very well, and I don't think many people do. So I just want to talk a little bit about the rating process. And Moody's, because of this association, makes all their data available to us, which is very nice. It turns out Matthew found out that if an MBA student phones up S&P and says they're doing a research project on credit, S&P will make their data available to the MBA student. So through Matthew, we got access to the S&P data, which was very nice. Now, there are two dominant agencies, Moody's and S&P. And I just want to run, for those of you who are totally ignorant of the rating system, these people rate financial securities. They're starting to rate almost everything, but they rate financial securities. In principle, they rate specific bond issues. So when you issue a bond, they will actually rate the quality of that bond issue. In practice, they actually rate the issuing name. In about 98% of the cases, it is the issuing name that is rated. In other words, all the securities issued by that entity have the same rating. Occasionally, different securities will have different ratings. And they adopt a scale, in the S&P case, from AAA down to CCC. And in the Moody's case, they use lowercase AAA down to CAA. These are the kinds of categories that you have. And just for the record, investment grade is BBB or BAA or better. And this actually has a lot of significance because there's a lot of institutional regulatory and institutional arrangements that force many people not to hold any debt instrument with a rating worse than BBB or BAA. In other words, they're required to hold only they're required to hold only investment grade securities or very, very limited quantities of non-investment grade stuff. And you're going to see this causes some peculiarities in the CDS market, this institutional arrangement out there. Now what is, so I just showed you the big picture on the ratings from AAA down to CCC. What you'll find out is as you start to look into it, the ratings are divided into what the agencies called notches. So instead of rating somebody AA, they will be rated AA1 or AA2 or AA3. One is better than two, two is better than three, so on. So they subdivided these ratings into these notches. S&P uses pluses and minuses for their notches. And whenever you see a rating change, typically it is one notch. So in other words, a typical rating downgrade will be from AA2 to AA3. So these are very fine gradations. Now I want you to think back to that picture John put up of those index level, the level index values. And if you think back to it, the AA, AAA index typically was around 40 basis points, I think, something like that. And the single A index was typically around 90 basis points, maybe. And the BAA index was maybe 150. So if you think about it, the space between those things is about 50 basis points, ballpark. And if you think there's three notches between them, when you see a one-notch change, you might see a credit spread change of 15 basis points. That might be what you're looking for. Of course, it's not what you see, but that might be what you're looking for. Now, the last thing is I just want to talk about what do the ratings mean? When you talk to the people at the rating agencies, they talk about this endlessly. I just took this off the Moody's webpage. This was actually written by John Moody in 1930-something or other. This is the definition of an A-rated bond. You know, bonds which are rated A possess many favorable investment attributes and are to be considered as upper medium-grade obligation, blah, blah, blah. It's a very, very soft definition. And when you push the people at the agency, it turns out the real definitions of the ratings are monotonicity. The AAA is better than AA, AA is better than single A, and so on. That's the real definition of the ratings. And they work very hard to maintain that monotonicity. I mean, it's valuable in its own right. But you have to be a little bit cautious about how you deal with this stuff. Now, rating agencies release lots of information to the public. If you go to the websites, they're just filled with news releases and whatnot. 15,000 people work for Moody's, and most of them spend their time writing reports, posting it on the website. What we were looking at was, what's the relationship between the release of this information from the agencies to the public and the level of credit spreads? And this is not entirely novel work. There's been a lot of work done in this arena in the bond market. But I just want to show you where things go. Now, the most blatant piece of news a rating agency can release is a rating change. And I put out a press release that says, this firm has been upgraded, this firm has been downgraded, its rating used to be X, now its rating is Y. So that's a very blatant piece of information that they release. But they also release some more subtle pieces of information. As we go down the list, we're looking at more subtle pieces. Moody's has what they call a review. S&P has what they call a watch list. These are equivalent things. These are formal statements by the rating agency that they are reassessing the credit quality of an entity. So they will say, we're putting IBM under review for upgrade if we think it's getting better, or for downgrade if we think it's getting worse. I don't know what the statistics are on the subsequent probability, the probability that the event subsequently takes place. I'm sure the people at Moody's could tell me that exactly, but I don't happen to know it offhand. But this is a fairly strong statement from the agency that something is probably going to happen. There is another review, which I haven't mentioned here, which is they just put it under review with no direction. And if I have time, I'll come back to that one. That's kind of an interesting one. And the third level, and this is a very soft level indeed, is what they call an outlook. And this is no more than an analyst's report. People in the investment banking community on the equity side are always writing analyst's reports. They're generally hyping some stock that they're trying to market. The rating agencies have analysts, and the analysts are on, I don't know this for a fact, but it appears that they're on sort of an annual cycle with firms. If you look at individual firms, you'll find that the upgrades tend to occur like in March for this firm, because March is the time that we look at this company, sort of thing. But whenever they examine a company, if they think they have something interesting to say about it, they will write an outlook, which is an analyst's report. And it's just their assessment of this firm, the industry, whatnot, so on and so forth. And the reports sometimes give a positive bent. They say that we think this firm is strengthening, whatnot, or they may have a negative bent, or they may have a neutral tone. But these are very soft pieces of information. And people in the rating agency tell me that there is nothing in particular that triggers the writing of an outlook. It's just whatever the analyst happens to be doing that interests him, that he thinks might make useful information for the outside world. Now, what I want to do is to take all this stuff and carry out an event study. Now, those of you from the finance end of things, you'll be really familiar with event studies. For the rest of you, I'll try to explain what I'm talking about here in a little detail. But basically, first of all, I'm going to look at it both ways. One is I'm going to condition on a rating event and look at what happens to the credit default swap spreads around the rating event. So, and then I'm going to turn things around and say, okay, now if I condition on the credit default swap spreads, I will then look at rating events to try to get some sense of what happens. Then I have a bunch of questions. And actually, as I said when I started out, the process of becoming familiar with the data implies that I know the answers to all the questions before I start. So my questions are, to what extent do credit spreads anticipate rating events? Are upgrades and downgrades treated symmetrically? Are all credit events treated equivalently? And by this I mean rating change, reviews, outlooks. Does the rating at the time of the event matter? And this is a particularly interesting one from my point of view, and the answer is very, very strongly yes. And the other interesting question is, does it matter how long you've had your rating at the time of the event? And the answer here is also yes. The longer you've had your rating prior to this event, the less reaction there is when you get downgraded or upgraded. Now, I want to start with two anecdotal cases, just so you get some feel for what things look like. The two anecdotes I chose were Enron, because I thought that was kind of interesting. I wanted to see what was going on there. And I knew a little bit about Enron anyway. And France Telecom, and I can't remember why I chose France Telecom. I think the cursor fell on it or something. And then I'm going to do a little bit more formal study. Now these are just the CDS spreads. This is all for 5-year CDS for France Telecom. And I have to say, I don't know anything about France Telecom beyond its name. I presume it operates in France and has something to do with telecommunications. But it's just a guess. I haven't actually bothered to learn anything about it. So these are the spreads. And this is from July 99 up to a couple of months ago in 2000. And as you can see, the spreads initially were I don't know what this is, but in the 30s and 40s, and it jumped up 150, down to 100, up to 200, down to 150, and then continued on its way. Those of you who are familiar with the telecom market wouldn't be surprised by that. What you have here are the various rating events. Unfortunately, the colors don't come out that well here. The red lines are rating events, where the rating has changed. This is an outlook. It's supposed to be an orange line, but it looks pretty red to me. And now this is a review, pardon me. Put on the watch list under review. And this is the blue line is an outlook. And to give you, to fill in the ratings, so it started at AA1, which is just one notch below AAA. So this is a very, very, very high quality investment. This is almost as good as you get. Downgraded to AA2, one notch. Downgraded two notches to A1. Downgraded two notches to A3. Downgraded one notch to BAA1. So this is the life of this thing. And as you get downgraded, you see the spreads going up and up and up. Now, the next slide is just going to focus on this little piece here. What happened here? And here is that little segment blown up from July 2001 to December 2001. And here you actually have the rating downgrade, and lo and behold, of course, you see the spreads have widened beforehand. So you're looking and you say, wow, look at that. Spreads really do anticipate the rating changes. And then I say, well, how about the review? Here's the day Moody's put it under review. And now it's not such a clear story as to who goes first. It's kind of like the CDS traders do nothing but read the Wall Street Journal. I don't know. And here is the time at which the ratings outlook report saying things look bad came in. Now the Enron story is one that's familiar to all. This is from 99 to 2001. Spreads pretty constant at 100 up until October 2000. Crept up to 150 range up to October 2001, and then they shot up quickly as Enron dropped off the face of the earth. One rating change here, and three as it went through its death throes. The last rating change here actually occurred the day after they filed for Chapter 11. But there's a story behind that, which I won't tell right now. But even so, let me back up a moment. Even so, so it looks like you see the spreads strongly anticipating the rating events. What I'm going to do is I'm going to blow up this last little section to show you what happens. And you blow it up, and this is the last little section. The first thing is I've greatly increased this scale so you can see more of what's happening here. Here are the two downgrades, but once again, here's the review for downgrades. So it looks like spreads anticipate ratings, but they also respond to ratings announcements. So that was my little anecdotal story. Now, a standard event study, you condition on events. So we look at a 90-day window around a rating change or a rating event. Every day, T in that window, so if T is minus 70, that's 70 days before the event, you just compute the average change in all the spreads seen that day for all the companies that had their ratings, who experienced the rating event. We did, the data's not really thick, so sometimes there's days where you just don't observe a quote. Wherever there was no quote observed, we assume the change was zero. This has some implications for some of the results. In some cases, instead of using averages, we used medians just to see how resistant things were. And then you compute the accumulated change over the interval, which is just, of course, the sum of all these daily average changes. And this is, I'm going to be showing you the daily average changes and the accumulated change around the rating events for a few things. So here I have all the downgrades for which we have data. And there were 481 downgrades in this four-year period. This is in investment grade only, I think. Maybe not. I'm not sure. And this is the day of the rating event. This is the day the press release came out. So we go from day minus 90 to day plus 90 relative to the event. And what you have here is the daily average change. And if you look at it, you'll see that it is slightly above zero. It hardly ever dips below zero. And if you look, there's a little spike there on day zero, the day the rating announcement is made. There's actually a little jump in the average spread. And it's a jump of about 15 basis points on average. Now, some of this is because of our practice of attributing a zero change when there's no observation. Because one thing that you do find is whenever a press release comes out, every name is quoted. That is one event that always happens. If you're upgraded or downgraded today, there were a lot of quotes on you. So maybe all that you're seeing here is a bunch of changes that have accumulated but not been seen until you actually get the quotes. And here you have the cumulative change in spread. Now, between day minus 90 and day zero, the average spread increases by 200 basis points. Think back to what I said. These are changes of one or two notches, and on average, when your rating changes by one or two notches, you might expect to see a change of 15 to 30 basis points. What do you see? You see 200 basis points on average. So there's huge change there. Now, that's the average. If you work in terms of medians, you get a much more reasonable result. That the median spread goes up by about 30 basis points. And that is kind of what you would want to see. So we actually looked at the distribution of what happened to our 481 companies around these events. And what I have plotted here, and they're ranked from most negative, this is the zero line here, to most positive, is the daily change, the average daily change for this entity over the 180-day period. This is over a six-month period. So here we have somebody whose spread increased by 15 basis points a day on average for 180 days. You do the arithmetic. I don't know what's 2,500, 3,000 basis points. That's Kmart. Kmart was rated single A, I believe, and they went directly to default. So there's a lot of firms out here that experienced huge change around the event. And when you look at it, here's the list of the, I don't know, top 13, I think. And it's like round up the usual suspects. We have WorldCom, Enron, The Gap. Maybe a lot of people aren't familiar, but The Gap is really in trouble. Quest, Nortel, Lucent, Kmart. These are these really extreme outliers. So we just threw them out of the sample and re-ran the thing without the outliers. And you get a more reasonable result. Still, average change of about 80 basis points. Now, we re-ran this looking at upgrades. A couple of points I'll make. There's only 87 upgrades. And this ties in with John's survivorship bias. One piece of information that you can glean from this market is if people are trading CDS on you, they generally have a low opinion of you. You see far more downgrades than upgrades in this population. So we don't have many upgrade events. And what you see here, here's the daily average change, and here's the cumulative change. Basically, the scale only goes from minus 8 to plus 8 basis points. You're just seeing noise here. There's no response to upgrades. So if you're downgraded, the spreads blow up. If you're upgraded, who cares?
Does that
Might. In the sense, I take it the tone of the question is there's been more downgrades in the last 2 years. Is that
well,
kind of...
more watchful or you're pessimistic, so the downgrades are causing much more impact.
Could be, although this data does go back now almost 5 years. So it's not a... You have to think back to how people were thinking 18 months and 2.5 years ago, sort of thing. It's not clear. Now, the rest of the story, I'm just going to trot through. Here's watch list downgrades or review for downgrade. Once again, a fairly strong anticipation on average of these things. And here's negative outlooks. These are the broker's reports. And even so, starting 45 days before the event, we start to see anticipation. As one of the guys at Moody said, these reports are nothing. So it's difficult to understand this result, and we're actually going on to look at that in some more detail. Here's the effect of your prior rating. We just divided it into all the A-rated companies and then the BAA-rated companies. And what you have here are the average and median changes for the BAA-rated companies. And here you have the average and median response for the A-rated companies who are being downgraded. And you see that all the bang is coming out of the BAA-rated companies. And this is seemingly driven by this institutional arrangement that people are not allowed, in many cases, to hold these guys if they get downgraded below BAA3. And so they're willing to pay huge premiums to buy insurance against that event. You can continue to hold it if you have the insurance premium, as it were. So that seems to be what's driving that phenomenon. And here's the effect of the time since the previous event. This blue line and this kind of pinky line are for the BAA-rated entities. This is people who have been rated BAA for more than a year before the downgrade. And this is the people who were downgraded within the last year. So if you have multiple downgrades, this is an extremely ominous sign, and the spreads blow up. And these two red lines are for the A-rated, A and better rated companies. And there's very little distinction. Although, even so, it is better to have had your rating for more than a year than less than a year. Now, the last part of this is turning things around and saying, okay, we conditioned on events and looked at spreads. Now I want to condition on spreads and look at events. And what I'm going to use here is not really a statistical tool. It's something that population economists use, the Lorenz curve and Gini ratios. And if you're not familiar with that, I'll give you a 2-minute tutorial. Lorenz curves are generally used to model the distribution of wealth in the population. That's the arena that it's used most commonly in. And we kind of backed into using it here in the paper that's being written. We're not using it because it's not statistically respectable. But basically, you rank a population in order of some variable, typically wealth. You plot the percentiles of that variable against the percentiles of the population. If the variable is uniformly distributed across the population, you get a straight line, you get a diagonal line. And if the variable is concentrated in one person, it turns out you get an L-shaped figure. The Gini ratio is twice the area between the Lorenz curve and the diagonal, and it's a number between 0 and 1. And so here I have a little example. This is the wealth distribution. If you go to Google and type in Lorenz or Gini, you'll get taken to one of these pages. This is the distribution of wealth in the U.S. as of 1994. This is some page with a diatribe against Ronald Reagan, his last year in office, I believe. Here I have the population of the U.S. sorted from poorest to richest. And here I have the percentile of the total wealth. So if you look at the poorest 20% of the population, they have about 5% of the wealth. And the poorest 40% have about 15% of the wealth, and so on and so forth. And if you sort in the opposite direction, your Lorentz curve looks like this. So now I've sorted from richest to poorest. So the curve's maybe above the diagonal, below the diagonal. This is what you would get if you had, if everybody had equal wealth. And the Gini ratio is twice that area. So, here's my Lorentz curve. Now, I'm looking at things over an almost 5-year period, and this is where the indices start to come into play. I adjust all the observed spreads by subtracting the appropriate index, because I want to get away from or eliminate this temporal pattern in the spreads. And then I sort the spreads from highest to lowest. This is equivalent to sorting on wealth. And my question is, do I see more events after high spreads than if I see than I see after low spreads? So I choose a rating event E and some time interval T. The event will be like downgrade or outlook negative or whatever. And I plot the quantiles of the events E that occur within time T against the quantiles of the adjusted spreads. And if you think you understand this, you're better than me. Just to give you a picture of what comes out, totally non-statistical, here's what happens. I chose my strongest event when I conditioned on events downgrades were most anticipated, and I chose 90 days consistent with it may be very slow. It's a big diagram. Let me back up. No. Well, I'm sure you appreciate this. I don't know. I think it's on the clock.
Oh, there you go.
Oh, there we go. Okay. It was a big diagram. Okay. Took a while. I forget how many data points are on here. It's in the tens or hundreds of thousands. I should filter it a little bit. So this is the actual Gini curve. Here I have the quantiles of the spread. And here I have the quantiles of the downgrades within 90 days. So if I take the 20% of the highest spreads, I capture about 45% of all the downgrades that occur in the next 90 days. And if I take the 40% of the spreads that are the highest, I capture about 70% of all the downgrades. But when you think about it, it's not that useful a piece of information. I mean, I have to cast my net fairly widely, and I still only, there's no precision in this prediction that's going on. And here's my Gini ratio, which in this case is 0.41. And here, for all the events, I have the Gini ratios plotted against T. T is the length of time I look into the future. And the events are, this is the blue line is upgrades. This is a review for upgrade. This is outlook with a positive bias. Red is downgrade. The purple is review for down, and the brown is outlook down. These are negative because the curve actually lies below the diagonal. These are positive because the curve lies above the diagonal. This is the example I just showed you. But once again, and what you find is, of course, as you get closer and closer to events, I'm asking, if I rank spreads and I choose the highest spreads and I say, does an event happen in the next 10 days? I'm actually pretty good at predicting those in terms of this Gini ratio measure. So this was the process that we went through in familiarizing ourselves with this data. And the summary is, you know, upgrades are not anticipated, or in fact, have seemed to have no relationship to CDS spread. Downgrades are strongly anticipated. You've got large increases around the event. Negative watch list, negative review and outlook announcements are anticipated less strongly. The size of the average spread seems disproportionately large. Some of this is driven by outliers, but nonetheless, there does seem to be an excessive response, and we're looking into whether there's kind of a reversal, a long-term reversal on these things. If you're rated A or better, there's much less response. If you're rated BAA, there's this strong, what I interpret to be an institutional response. The longer you've been in a rating class, the response is smaller, and it turns out the anticipation is much smaller as well. We did a lot of other stuff that I haven't shown you, looking at equity. You can do the same thing with equities that you can do with CDS spreads. They show the same amount of rating event anticipation as CDS spreads do for downgrades. They show no anticipation for upgrades, but what the most interesting thing from my point of view on the equities is that equities seem to respond to upgrades. So they don't anticipate it, but if you announce an upgrade, the stock price goes up. So equities seem to respond much more so than CDS spreads. And that's the end of the show. Thank you very much.